Today I'd like to talk about training in the Buddhist teaching. The practice of the Buddhist teaching is a training of the mind. So when we come to practice meditation, we have to see it in the right sort of light. When we're practicing meditation, we're not simply looking for kind of an escape, a peaceful sort of vacation from the everyday troubles and difficulties that we have. Meditation is like any sort of training or any sort of study that we do, any learning experience that we undertake. The idea is that we come out of it with something new, with something more than we went into it in with. So, what was it exactly that the Lord Buddha had us train in? The Lord Buddha had us train in three things. And this makes up the practice of Buddhism. Another important way to explain is that when we talk about Buddhism, we're not talking about faith or belief or theory. Buddhism is a training. So not only is the meditation a training, Buddhism is the training itself. The teaching of the Lord Buddha was a training, not simply something that he wished for us to believe or to study or think about. But all of the Lord Buddha's teaching was for the purpose of training ourselves. So we train ourselves in three things. The first thing we train ourselves in is we call morality. The second thing is concentration or focus of mind. And the third is wisdom. These three things make up the whole of the Lord Buddha's teaching. The beginning of the Lord Buddha's teaching is morality. The middle of the practice of the Lord Buddha's teaching is concentration. And the peak or the pinnacle of the Lord Buddha's teaching is wisdom. So these three things constitute what we mean by when we say Buddhism or the training, the practice of the Lord Buddha's teaching. So what is morality? What is concentration? What is wisdom? Morality, the very basic beginning of the Lord Buddha's teaching, is the practice of training our body and training our speech, giving up bad, unwholesome, unskillful actions and speech, which would otherwise lead to suffering for ourselves and suffering for other people. So when we first come to train, the first thing we have to learn is what are the things which are going to lead to suffering for ourselves and lead our minds to become upset if we undertake these things. So when we do certain things, we understand that these things are going to get in the way of our spiritual development, are going to block us from attaining concentration and wisdom. So the very beginning of the Lord Buddha's teaching is to give up these certain things which are unwholesome, unhelpful, unbeneficial to ourselves and unbeneficial to other people. It's the very beginning of any religious or any holy, any spiritual life. And it's the very basis of the Lord Buddha's teaching. It's called morality. So what are the things which are unwholesome to do? These are not to kill. The things which are unwholesome are killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, adultery. These are the things which we consider to be the very basis of morality. The abstention from these things is the very basis of spiritual practice. Because when we undertake these things, when we undertake killing or even just hurting or attacking or beating other people, it's impossible to think that our mind should somehow calm down and we should come to understand reality for what it is. In a way, you can look at it that we're actually perverting reality. We're going against some sort of vibration which exists in the universe. We have this feeling in ourselves that we don't want to die, and that death is something something undesirable for ourselves. And then when we go and bring this about on other living beings, whether they be animals, insects, or even unborn embryos or so on, somehow it actually disrupts the nature of the universe and creates a sort of a chaotic, a unsettled, a sort of a ripple in the fold of the universe. When you practice meditation, you can feel this. You feel the real aversion to doing these things, to killing, to stealing. And you can feel how it actually creates some sort of disturbance in the reality around us, and create suffering for ourselves and, of course, for other beings. And the things which we refrain, these are the things we refrain from in terms of bodily action. And then in terms of verbal speech, we also refrain from, there are many sorts of speech which we refrain from as well. So we refrain from lying, we refrain from harsh speech, hurtful speech. We refrain from useless speech, speech which is not necessary, just gossiping or chatting. And we refrain from divisive speech, speech which is meant to split people up, or saying bad things about other people behind their backs, or so on. You know, saying things which are meant to hurt, break up friendships and so on. We refrain from these things as well because they create disruption in our mind. There, most people, most moral people in the world would agree that these are unwholesome or unbeneficial things. And when we undertake them, they only lead to suffering for ourselves and for others. Then we're best to give them up. So the first part of the Lord Buddha's teaching is simply to give certain things up. But it also goes a lot deeper than that, because simply learning about these rules is often not enough for us to actually give these things up. We can say to ourselves, okay, when I'm here, I know that I can't do this and this and this, and these are the rules. But when the opportunity comes up, we might very well go ahead and do these things. And this is because our minds are not yet trained. So training in morality is actually very much a part of what we're doing here in our walking and our sitting. Because as we get closer to reality and closer to understanding the reality of everything we do, every time we act, what is the reality of the action? What is the nature of the action? When we speak, what is the nature of the speech? What's going on in our mind at the time when we do these things? Then we can really and truly give these things up from the heart. So when the opportunity to kill or to steal or to hurt other beings comes up, we simply refrain from, we feel averse to doing so. We feel averse to creating suffering in other beings, knowing that this is something which creates suffering in ourselves as well. And so the Lord Buddha separated morality into four different parts. The first is actually studying the rules, studying the certain things which are agreed as to be unavoidably unwholesome. Things like killing. It's impossible to say that you could kill someone, kill a living being intentionally, you know, without having any unwholesome motivation. Or when your mind is pure, it's impossible to say that you could actually do such a thing intentionally. So the first is simply just to know what these rules, what these things are, what the various things which we consider to be unwholesome in terms of bodily action or in terms of our speech. The second part is guarding our senses, guarding the cause for the breaking of these rules, breaking our morality. So the reason why we kill or steal or hurt other beings, say bad things, do bad things, is always because of something which we experience, whether it's something we see or something we hear or something we smell or taste or feel or think that leads us to want something that we maybe can't, that isn't ours, and so we find some way to get it in a immoral way, or something which is something which is unpleasant to us to such an extent that we wish we do something to get rid of it, which is also immoral. And so the practice of meditation, a very big part of the practice of meditation, is simply guarding these sense doors, guarding our eyes, guarding our ears, guarding our nose, our tongue, our body and our mind, so that though we may see things, we don't continue this, we don't make more of the sight than it actually is. When we see something that we want, instead of chasing after it immediately, we understand it for what it is, that it's something which has arisen, something which is going to pass away. It's something which comes and goes, something which arises at the eye. It's simply light touching the eye. It's a sight. When we hear things, instead of getting angry or upset or becoming attracted to the sound, we simply know it for what it is. We say to ourselves, hearing, 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 reminding ourselves of what it is. As we say to ourselves, hearing, 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 the mind isn't able to go further with it, isn't able to create more, make more of it than it actually is. And so there arises concentration as a result, because of the morality, keeping the mind from chasing after the sensation, the experience, the object. There arises a concentration as a result. And the same with the nose and the tongue and the body and the mind. So sometimes even just thinking of things, we see someone and we remember what they did, the bad things they did to us, and as a result this leads us to want to hurt them as well. When we think this or think that, we want it, our wanting comes from the things we think we would enjoy or so on. When we guard our mind and we say thinking, the thinking is unable to continue, is unable to proliferate and become more than simply thinking. There arises no liking or disliking, no judging of the thought, no judging of the object. This is another important part of morality, is keeping the mind from chasing after, bringing the mind back to the original object. When we see something, bringing the mind back to the seeing part of it, and not letting the mind wander off into liking or disliking or judging the object. Another important part of morality is our livelihood, our lifestyle. And this is, in some ways you could say, it's the extension of good or bad deeds. So we say there are certain things which are unwholesome, which are immoral things to do. Well, it's not to say that if you've done these things in the past, that you can't come and practice meditation, but when these things such as killing or stealing or adultery or lying or so on and so on, when they become a livelihood for those people who live based on these, who make a living based on these immoral trade or immoral ways of acting or speaking, when it becomes a livelihood, this is the point of no return, you could say, where a person who is engaging in such a livelihood will have a very difficult time coming to practice meditation. This is also another very important part of morality, is keeping your livelihood on track, not engaging in trade of alcohol or trade of weapons or trade of poisons, trade of living beings, or so on. Trade of things which are clearly involved with the breaking of precepts. And also, in terms of living a livelihood which is in tune with the meditation practice. So not chasing after money just for the sake of getting rich or for the sake of getting more and more and more. Livelihood in some sense means taking what you're given. The example is of a monastic who simply takes whatever they receive, whatever is given to them, and doesn't go out looking for things more than they already have. unless they're sick or looking for medicine, they don't ask or request for anything. They simply take whatever is given to them. Whatever they have, they are content with. And so we can take this as an example, or we can understand the way of life which was taught by the Lord Buddha, of being content with whatever we have. When we live our lives not to need more and more and more, and bigger and better and more beautiful and more exotic and more luxurious, but simply being content and working only enough to keep ourselves alive, to keep ourselves going, and to keep ourselves in a way of life which allows us to practice, allows us to train ourselves. This is an important part of morality. And the final part of morality is, it goes together with that, is considering the things that we have, you know, using things for wisely, not using things to bring about just more and more sensual pleasure, but using things for a purpose. You know, when we have clothes, we use the clothes to keep us warm, to keep us cool, to keep insects off of our bodies, and to keep our bodies covered. We use food simply to keep ourselves alive so we can continue to practice, not to make us big and strong, or to make us feel good, or not eating just for a snack or for pleasure, out of fun or so on. But eating simply so that we can continue training ourselves, using our shelter, using our bedding and so on. When we have a bed or a sleeping room, means not sleeping, oversleeping, but simply using our bedroom for the purpose of training ourselves. So we have a quiet place to do walking meditation and sitting meditation and do lying meditation, but not to sleep, not using our bedroom as a place to sleep for hours and hours and hours with no benefit. Because when we sleep so much, then we lose all this time that we could be training ourselves. And when we wake up again, we've been out of training for so long that it's very hard for us to get back into it. And the final is medicine as well. Using medicine only for the purpose of really and truly overcoming sickness and disease, not simply taking painkillers so that we don't have to feel the pain, or taking drugs so that we feel happy all the time, and so on. Not simply relying on these pills like a drug addict, but taking whatever medicine we can be sure is going to not have side effects and not hurt our body, but is going to alleviate the sickness, is going to help with the remedies. So things like vitamins and things like herbal medicines which help the body fight off sicknesses and so on. So using medicine simply for what they're meant to do, not using them to hide or to run away from unpleasant situations. And so this is, altogether, this is the Lord Buddha's teaching on morality. This is the basis of the meditation practice, the basis of the Lord Buddha's training. And it's for the purpose of bringing out concentration, because when we stop doing so many, all of these many, many things which distract the mind and create unwholesome states of mind, then our mind starts to calm down. And when we start guarding the senses and seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, thinking, our mind stops chasing after these things, stops running around. It starts to quiet down, starts to calm down, and it starts to live and be more comfortable with reality, not having to chase after concepts and ideas and illusions and dreams and so on. We're able to be here and now much more of the time. And so concentration arises. And concentration in the Lord Buddha's teaching is of three kinds. The first kind of concentration is where you focus specifically on a single object, like when you're watching television or when you're using the computer. But in the meditation practice, we go deeper than that, and we watch simply it's like watching television when it's off. You know, watching a single color or a single picture that doesn't change. You're watching a white circle on the walls, or staring at something, staring at a candle flame, for instance. Staring at the earth, staring at a pool of water. Or thinking about something continuously, thinking about the Buddha, thinking about many, many different things, or thinking about love, you know, sending loving kindness out to all beings. Keeping the mind on a single object, just spreading love throughout the whole universe, or thinking about the Buddha all of the time. Thinking about something until the mind becomes fixed and focused. When you look at a flame, and you look at the flame until you can close your eyes and you still see the flame. And then eventually your mind is only a single flame. And this is one kind of meditation where the mind becomes fixed, where the mind is absorbed, we say, in the object. This is not so useful immediately for the purpose at hand, because we're trying to learn about ourselves and about reality. So here we've created something in our minds which is an illusion, is a mental construct. But if we then use that, we can then look at the reality of it, and we can use it for vipassana, for insight meditation, to bring about wisdom. But for our purposes, it's not immediately useful, so we're not really going to spend any time training in this one. We can understand that this can arise from meditators sometimes. Sometimes your mind fixes on a certain object. But then we're going to try to move on and to use that as our object and see, use the concentration as an object and see that it's actually impermanent, and let go of whatever it is that we're fixing on. So we're not going to purposefully try to fix our mind on anything. The second type of concentration is very similar to this one, but it's simply considering a certain thing from many angles, say. So this is where this is the mindfulness of the Buddha. When we think about the Buddha and we consider all of his good qualities and so on, or when we think about the parts of the body and we think about how they, their nature and their color and their place and so on, the hair on the head, the hair on the body, the fingernails, the teeth. And so we look at our body and break it up into parts. And because we're considering it from many different angles, our mind doesn't become focused, but it does become calm. And this one we're also not going to spend much time on, because it also is based on concepts. It's based on sort of the idea of the hair on our head. Even though we don't actually see or even feel the hair on our head, we start thinking about it. And because it just comes up in our mind as a thought, we can't really use it to create wisdom and to understand reality. It's not really real at the moment when we think about it. You know, we're not experiencing the hair on our head, for instance. But it is a cause for concentration to arise. The concentration which we're trying to make arise here, though, is concentration based on reality. So, for instance, when we say to ourselves seeing, or when we say to ourselves hearing, or when we're watching the stomach rise and fall, and we say to ourselves, rising, falling, rising, falling. Fixing the mind on reality, on what's really happening in the here and now, on what's going on in the world around us, in the world inside of us. And this is important because this does bring about wisdom. As we focus on the reality inside us and the reality coming in through the doors, the six sense doors from the world around us, wisdom and understanding about these things arises. Because all of the problems that come up, they have their core, their root in reality. There's no concept that could give us, that could be a true cause for us to suffer. It all has to have some basis in reality. For instance, when we think about something bad that someone did to us, well, there's a cause for our suffering, and that's the thought. It has nothing to do with the concept of the person who did the bad thing to us, because that's past. That's not real anymore. What's real is this thought which arises in the mind. Or when we see someone and they're attacking, or they're doing bad things to us. And we say to ourselves, seeing, when we know the seeing, of seeing something that we don't want to see, someone doing something that we don't want them to do, for instance. We say to ourselves, seeing, see, the seeing is the reality. And normally we fall, we don't like it, or we see something we want. Now when we focus on the reality of it, instead of focusing on the person or the thing or so on, we simply focus on the reality, the problem disappears, and the wanting or the needing is not able to arise. And this is because there's a certain wisdom, an understanding of it simply for what it is. And we come to see it as something which arises and ceases, something which is only real insofar as, or the reality of it is only the seeing, and the person, the place, or the thing, or so on, the object of our desire or aversion is actually just a concept which arises in the mind. So this concentration is what we're trying to develop here. It's called momentary concentration. It's based on one moment after one moment after one moment. And this is why continuity in the practice is so important, because our concentration is only one moment at a time. And if we're not able to continue our practice and practice every moment from moment to moment to moment, then it's impossible that our mind is going to become fixed, that our mind is going to really see things clearly. Because every moment we have to train ourselves to come back then. If we go off and we're not mindful for some time, when we come back we have to train ourselves again and again and again and come back from nothing to get our minds back on track. But when we do fix our mind on the present reality again and again and again at every moment, then slowly our minds are able to, this concentration develops, and every moment after moment after moment we get stronger concentration, and we're able to thus see the object clearer and clearer, and less and less of this liking or disliking or judging of things is able to arise. And this is how true wisdom is able to come into being. How we're able to come to understand the truth of the reality around us. And so now we come to wisdom. This is the consummation of the Lord Buddha's teaching, the final part of the Lord Buddha's training, the training that the Lord Buddha taught. And wisdom is of three kinds as well, and only one kind comes up in meditation, but just so that we can understand what is meant by wisdom, there are many things we could mean by the word wisdom. The first is wisdom from hearing or from reading. So when we read about this or that, when we read about the Buddha's teaching, when we read about meditation, or we hear someone talking about meditation, and we keep it in memory, this is considered to be a sort of wisdom. It's necessary, because without it we would probably never have a chance to practice, or we would practice sometimes correctly, sometimes incorrectly, not able to follow the path because we don't have a clear idea of what is the right way to practice. So it would be very difficult for us to gain any sort of real and true wisdom. So this first type of wisdom is actually important, but we can't rely on it. If we rely on listening or on reading books about meditation or so on, and they say it's like reading a menu. In the end, you still feel hungry. You aren't able to become satisfied simply by reading the menu. And the second type of wisdom is the wisdom which comes from thinking. So once you've heard someone talking, or you've heard some teaching, or you've read something about meditation, then you go to think about it and you try to understand how to put it into practice or what it means or so on, and try to get some understanding of what has been said, and try to get a good picture of the meaning of what has been said. This is a kind of wisdom. Once you come to understand what has been said, what has been taught, and when you read and you're able to put together various teachings, this is also important so that you can then go ahead and practice it. But on the other hand, if you just sit around thinking, it is also of very little use to us. Because simply thinking about it, there's still no understanding and no realization. And so you're still not sure, is it going to lead you anywhere, or what is it going to lead to, or so on. And there's still no practice, so it's simply thinking about the benefits. They say it's like when you hear someone talking about an elephant. If you've never seen an elephant, when someone describes to you what is an elephant like, this is like when you hear about meditation, when someone explains to you about meditation practice. And when someone tells you about an elephant and then you chase after the elephant, you go looking for it and you see the footprints of the elephant. This is like thinking about meditation practice. When you think about how it is that you do it, and when you try to put it all together in your mind, and you consider in your mind which is the right way to practice, is this the right way, is that the right way? This is like chasing after the elephant. But then when you finally realize, when you finally come to see the elephant, when you chase after the elephant in the forest, and you finally come to meet with a real live elephant, well, they say is like when you actually put yourself to the practice, and you come to realize for yourself the truth of the experience. When you come to understand the reality of the experience, this is like meeting with the elephant itself. And so this is what we're aiming for in the practice. We're aiming to come to understand without any thinking. So the intention is not to sit there and say to ourselves, rising, falling, and to think about, this is impermanent, this is suffering, this is non-self, to think about all of the teachings that we've heard and try to analyze the experience. When we simply say to our, when you simply watch the rising, watch the falling, watch the movements of the body, and watch the feelings that arise, and the thoughts that arise, and the emotions that arise, then we come to see for ourselves without ever having to think, or ever having to study, or ever having to analyze. We come to see many things about these things. We come to see what things are good, and what things are useful, what things are not so good and not so useful. And we're able to distinguish, and we're able to decide for ourselves, and we're able to change many things about ourselves. We're able to change those things which create suffering for ourselves and create suffering for other people. So this is the training which we're undergoing here. We're training ourselves in three stages. The very beginning is simply to stop the mind from wandering, stop the mind from falling into suffering states, and to bring the mind back again and again to the present moment. The second part is to keep the mind in the present moment. Once the mind is there, is to develop this experience of the present moment and this understanding of the experience which is going on inside of us. And so then the third part is the realization and the understanding of this experience, the understanding of good things and bad things, and the understanding of things as they are, so that we don't then become confused or misunderstand these things, so that we don't ever have to get angry about these things or get addicted to these things. Once we understand them for what they are, then all of our greed and our addiction and our anger and our frustration simply disappears. We see that it has no bearing on reality, that actually everything that comes and arises in our experience simply fades away after a short time and has no intrinsic good or bad quality to it. It simply is for what it is. And when we're able to see this, then our minds are, we live our lives in a pure state of mind without all of these judging discomfort or suffering. We're simply able to see things for what they are. This is the consummation of the Buddha's teaching. Once we have wisdom, then we have freedom. The mind becomes free of all sorts of suffering states, because we don't follow after things. We don't become upset or confused or deluded by the objects of our experience. So this is something just to help people understand what it is that we're doing here, that we're not simply coming to sit and feel peaceful for a while. We're coming to really learn about ourselves and really to see the problem that we have inside and understand more about it, about what it is that's causing us suffering and what we have to do to overcome this. And so we slowly, slowly change who we are and make ourselves a more peaceful, more happy, more free person, sort of being. This is the path which the Lord Buddha taught, and this is the Dhamma for today. So now, everyone, please continue to practice, and at 3 o'clock we start reporting.